wonderful to see so many nice shining faces on Sunday morning. Isn't this nice? This is the spiritual meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous at the Desert Roundup. My name is Ed Sanford, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm just a garden variety, indigenous to Palm Springs and the Los Angeles area, and it's wonderful to be with all of you people, and we want to welcome you here to Palm Springs. We hope you enjoyed your stay here. I know you did. You wouldn't be up so early this morning and looking so nice if you didn't. I'm sure we have a wonderful meeting for you this morning. Your chairman at the meeting is well known to you. There isn't anything I could really say, and he doesn't need me to eulogize him because his communication with all of you has been, I'm sure, very helpful to many of you. And spiritually, we are all trying to condition ourselves for communication. The purpose of this meeting, I'm sure you will realize, is not a philosophical discussion of fine points, but merely a method of communication that each of us have in the manner of AA. Without anything further, I'll introduce your chairman, Chuck C.
I am Chuck C., and I am an alcoholic. Hi. I would like very much this morning for us to start this meeting with a little prayer with a purpose. Our beloved Andy Given, a man who has had 26 years of enthusiastic participation in our fellowship, had a little heart attack this morning early, and he's presently in the hospital. We hope that it will turn out to be a light attack. But let us, all of us who believe in the efficacy of prayer, take a moment of silent meditation and prayer for Andy and his wife, Carol. Will you please join me in a moment of silent meditation and prayer for Andy? Amen. Thank you. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they might solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. I think that perhaps these are amongst the most beautiful words in our program. A fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they might solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. This is labeled as a spiritual meeting. Personally, I don't know how one Alcoholics Anonymous meeting could be more spiritual than another. To me, all Alcoholics Anonymous meetings are spiritual. And perhaps we call this one a spiritual meeting because it's on Sunday morning or something. But I have a little difficulty with Sunday morning. Somehow or another, I can't think of one day as being more spiritual than another or more meaningful than another. For those amongst us who have been returned from the land of the living dead into the land of the living, every day is a gift from God. And every day we not only share one with another, but we also share ourselves and our gratitude with our very own God that has made this all possible. Now, we're going to proceed pretty much in the manner that we always do in an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. We're going to have the steps and the traditions and a couple of speakers. And try to get you out here sometime for a late afternoon lunch. Ha-ha! See, I know our speakers. And I'm not going to let you get off this easy myself. But we'll get the ball rolling with the reading of our portion of chapter 5. And our member who's going to read it has been known to me favorably for a number of years. I guess some 19. She's now a member of the Scottsdale group, Scottsdale, Arizona group, and she's going to read our portion of chapter 5, Fran I from Scottsdale.
Hi, I am Fran Innes, and I'm an alcoholic. And I am from Scottsdale. But my home group is South Pasadena, San Marino. And although I've been in Scottsdale for 10 years, I want you to know that we have Southern California AA in Scottsdale. And when you were invited to our convention, which is very much like the Roundup, it's a wonderful convention, and somebody last night kindly announced it for us. And they say no announcements, but I do cordially invite all of you to come to Scottsdale the last day in September and the first 2 days in October. There are an awful lot of people in this room that have been over, and they love us and keep coming back, and we keep coming back here, and that helps keep me sober. Chapter 5 and how it works. Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. Usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunates. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Our stories disclose, in a general way, what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. If you have decided you want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it, then you are ready to take certain steps. At some of these we balked. We thought we could find an easier, softer way, but we could not. With all the earnestness at our command, we beg of you to be fearless and thorough from the very start. Some of us have tried to hold on to our old ideas, and the result was nil until we let go absolutely. Remember that we deal with alcohol, cunning, baffling, powerful. Without help, it is too much for us. But there is one who has all power, and that one is God. May you find him now. Half measures availed us nothing. We stood at the turning point. We asked his protection and care with complete abandon. Here are the steps we took, which are suggested as a program of recovery. One, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we're entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly ask him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. Nine, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. 12. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Many of us exclaimed, "What an order! I can't go through with it." Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. The point is that we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Our description of the alcoholic, the chapter to the agnostic, and our personal adventures before and after make clear three pertinent ideas. A, that we were alcoholic and could not manage our own lives. B, that probably no human power could have relieved our alcoholism. And C, that God could and would if he were so. Thank you.
Thank you, friend. These 12 steps are the basis of our recovery. They are also the base of the triangle of recovery, unity, and service worldwide. Now, one of the sides of the triangle is unity. And we have also 12 traditions, which are our guide to unity. And they will be read by Muriel Z. from Malibu, California. Muriel?
Them.
Did you take away the traditions?
I knew something like this would happen. I know the steps by heart.
They're in this book.
I don't think I can open the book at this particular point. My name is Muriel Zink, and I am from Malibu, and I am an alcoholic. And it is a rare and beautiful privilege to be here today. It's almost unbelievable to be able to look at this many people and say, I love you all, and you love me. To the newcomer, let me say with all my heart, learn to live with us. Join this family of ours. Find the rebirth that we all found on this program. Wear it at first like a loose garment. Envelop yourself in it and in the love that you find here. It is one of life's truly beautiful experiences. And to me, the rebirth that I experienced in coming into AA and the magnificent miracle and gift of sobriety is the most wonderful thing that has ever happened to me in my life. The 12 traditions. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon AA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for AA membership is a desire to stop drinking. 4, each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or AA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. 6, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7, every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8, Alcoholics Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9, AA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10, Alcoholics Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the AA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11, our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. 12, anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
That's the base in one side of our triangle, and now we are going to have the other side, service. You know, Alcoholics Anonymous was, is, and will be one alcoholic talking to another in the dark room. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. Everything else that we do in AA is something to help you and to help me become better equipped to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers in the dark room. Our groups, our intergroups, our international intergroup office, our 3 books, and our many conference-approved pamphlets are for the primary purpose of making us better equipped to carry the message to the alcoholic. We're in one business, and that's it. Now, a desert roundup is a wonderful thing. Our Southern California conferences, our state conferences, and our international conferences are a good thing. But we must never delude ourselves into thinking that they are the thing. They are not the thing. They are to, again, better equip us to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And in our program of service, we have our own people, alcoholics, to tell a little of their story. Now we have two kinds of alcoholics, male and female. And in my book, there are only two kinds, just male and female. And our first speaker this morning is a member of the female contingent of our fellowship. And she only has 10 minutes, and she's not going to be able to tell you very much in 10 minutes, you know. Because that just isn't time. But it's a good enough time to share, and Muriel C. is going to share with us. She's from Hollywood. Muriel, please. You know, if there is ever a time when it's apparent that I cannot be regimented, it's at a time like this. This is Carol C., not Muriel C., Carol.
My name is Carol, and I'm definitely a female alcoholic. It is a pleasure to be here this morning. And it's amazing at how calm I do feel. So many people offered me their strength and their good wishes before coming up here that I feel calmer than I ever have before speaking. Someone mentioned recently in a talk from the podium, they used the phrase, the old me and the new me. And I thought, well, he's kind of lucky because I only had one self. I found out that the old me hadn't disappeared when I got to this program and the alcohol was removed from my system. I was given a power of choice, which I had never had before. And I am now able to choose whether I want to hang on to the garbage or whether I want to move forward. And it's been interesting. I tried to separate my old self for a long time because I didn't have the courage or the strength to look at the past. I came to the program when I was almost 27 years old. I'd been drinking for about 12 years, and I'd been sick for a longer time than that. The drinking allowed me to do the things that were within me to do. And this is how I feel about it. It allowed me to humiliate myself, to degrade myself, to lose my self-respect. But it also allowed me to talk to people, to work, to play. It did everything for me. It was my higher power. And anybody who finds trouble in accepting a higher power ought to realize that they gave themselves to a higher power when they were drinking. I had no control, really, over what I was doing when I was drinking. But once I was sober, I had to do something because these same desires were within me, and I had to start looking at them. This was not pleasant. I started trying to do inventories when I was about a month old or less. I remember getting on the phone one time with a gal and saying, "Now I want to get started, and how can I start?" Well, she knew the fellow that I'd been going with for some time, and she said, well, why don't you start on him? You probably have a lot of resentments against him. So I said, okay, that's pretty good, and I had my big yellow pad, and I was talking to her, and she's giving me a couple starters, and I said, okay, you know, and it was like she was pushing the starter button, and I started writing down here about five lines. I said, okay, I'm on my way, and I hung up the phone, and I started writing away, and I kept making attempts. This was not an inventory, but it was trying. And I tried to work the other steps, but it was quite a while before I really understood what was going on. The first half of the first step was easy. I came to this program wanting to stop drinking. I didn't know that all you had to do was leave the glass over there. It was impossible for me to do. I hadn't been working steadily for the last 2 years of my drinking. It started out with my just not wanting to work, and it ended by the time I got to the program with my not being able to work. I started getting fired when I hadn't planned on being fired. My life was getting unmanageable. And not only that, but I got in a fight with the unemployment people. And I didn't realize it until I was going over some old income tax papers recently how closely these events happened. I know I got fired from my last job in January of '63. I got in a fight with the unemployment people at the beginning of March of '63. I called AA on March 29th. my friend had had about enough of me, and this was the last person I felt I could turn to. And he was starting to agree with me. You know, I would ask for reassurance. I'd say, well, maybe I should leave. I'm sure you don't want me around anymore. But he was starting to agree. And I was getting very scared. I thought I had an out. You know how things come about miraculously. A man that I knew that I had hated, called me from San Francisco. He had just been released from prison, and I thought, well, here's my answer. He always said he was crazy about me. I'll go up to San Francisco and I'll see if he'll take care of me. I went up there in March, the same March. God, I was really running around in circles trying to find a way to go. And he didn't want to take care of me. He'd run out of his money, and he was trying to, you know, find some shady deals to get involved with and still kind of keep a clean front. He saved me from getting arrested up there, by the way. I didn't even know what was going on, and I was in the wrong place at the wrong time. He came whizzing in and just, you know, hauled me out by the hand as the cops were coming in the back door or something. So he didn't really want me around either. You know, I wasn't too cool of a companion for him. So I went back and forth. That wasn't my answer. I was considering. Now, my folks had been divorced when I was five, and I'd lived with my mother. My father and I would drink together when we got together. And I'd come out here in '57, and of course, being alcoholic, I wanted to impress the hometown folks in the family. And I'd started working in a studio, and I was very celebrity conscious. I wanted to be with the swingers and where the action was, and I loved going to the bullfights in Las Vegas. And these, to me, were things that sounded glamorous, and so I wanted to do them so that I could write home about them. And I was very active. So I was very concerned with impressing my family and getting their approval. But at this point in March, I was considering getting in touch with my father and asking him if maybe I could just come and live in his attic and just hide up there and not come down and bother anybody and not eat very much, but just so I could have a place where I could be without getting kicked out and drink. And I knew he drank, so I didn't think, you know, he would. I felt that he would kind of understand. But it must have been pride. I'm awfully glad I didn't call him or get in touch with him, because instead I called AA. I do not remember making a conscious decision to call AA. I was so groggy the morning that I called. All I remember thinking was, after flying in from out of town and watching one girlfriend of mine take a few pills and go to work, and stopping at another girlfriend's to see her burn kitchen and have a little drink before I went home. I went home, and it was close to 9 o'clock, and I thought, well, most offices open up at 9 o'clock. I'll wait a few minutes till they sharpen their pencils and get organized. And then I called AA, but I don't ever remember deciding to call AA. I don't know whether I looked in the phone book or called the operator, but I do remember I was so shocked when the phone was answered and a voice said, Alcoholics Anonymous, because I thought that somebody would wait for me to give the password before they would let me know that this anonymous organization was at the other end of the line. Sybil answered the phone down there, and we had quite a conversation. I just found out Friday evening what some of the conversation was. And I painted quite a sad little picture. She was very worried about me. And I think she gave me a little bit of sympathy, and I just took it from there and started pouring out my whole story to the first sympathetic ear I'd had for a long time. I went to a meeting that night. Now, this is, as I told you, I wanted to stop drinking. That was all I wanted. I knew if I stopped drinking, I'd be able to get a job. I'd be able to do the things that a human being has to do. Thank God it had boiled down to that. I just had the one problem when I came here. But during the first week or two of sobriety, and I had no desire to drink. There was this wave of strength carrying me along, even though, you know, I hated you. You were sober, and I was getting what I wanted. I was getting sobriety by associating with you. This one thought kept going through my mind, and I believe that every thought is a prayer, and this little prayer was answered. I said, now don't be a smartass when you start feeling good. Don't think that you're all well. Remember how you feel now. Well, I did just what I thought I would do, and it was a small, sneaky thing that I couldn't admit to myself for quite a while. I had some cough syrup at home, and I had a sore throat, and I decided to put the two of them together. And the cough syrup had 15% alcohol in it, and I put it on the kitchen sink where my old vodka bottle used to be. And you know how they do those dissolves in the movies? You know, one moment I saw a cough syrup bottle sitting there, and then it looked like a vodka bottle, and then it was back to a cough medicine bottle. It was alcohol. It didn't matter whether it was vodka or beer or wine or perfume or shaving lotion or what. To me, it was alcohol. And I had some. So this was the one thing that I did, and it bothered me for a long time. But it showed me how careful I had to be of myself. How sneaky and insidious my thinking was. Another day at work, I remember thinking, when I had been sober for about a month, I got a job after I'd been sober 5 weeks, and I'd been on the job for about a month. I was feeling very uncomfortable around people, and I was unable to sleep at night. And I thought, my goodness, if you took a Milltown or two during the day, you'd feel so nice and relaxed around people. You'd be able to get your work done better, feel good, and you'd be able to sleep at night, too. And then you're so tired when you wake up in the morning, but those Dexedrines used to really get you going when you needed it. And I had the whole recipe going here. And then, thank God, the thought came, well, that's what those people mean when they say stay away from pills. Here I am looking for another artificial answer. What if I do feel uncomfortable? For the first time in my life, I'm finding out how truly inadequate I am in personal relationships. And if I look like a fool or if I act like a jerk, that's the way I am. I'm going to have to grow from there and accept myself the way I am. So we didn't get into the pills. I think I used God for a long time. As a matter of fact, I feel that I am just now, in the last few months, beginning to really care about people. I have liked specific people. But I think it's been only if I've been reassured first that they like me. I have not dared to commit myself without being reassured first that I will get some affection or approval in return. And I have used God as a barrier. I know that we all have this in common. We are all His children. And this I would use as a step between myself and people. But now I don't have to separate it that much. It's all coming together. And I can like people, whether they have anything to give me or not. I can give them my good thoughts and good feelings. I received a compliment for the first time a couple of weeks ago. Many times people have said nice things to me or complimented me, but I've never received one before. They've been given to me. And this was quite an experience because it proved to me that I'm beginning to open up and be receptive. A gas station attendant complimented me as I stopped in for gas, and he was very sincere, and I could tell this. His feeling was very sincere, and I felt warm all over. It's the first time I had ever felt anything like that, and it was just great. I know that I've been growing these 3 years, and I know I have a long way to go. It's good to have something to look forward to in life, and I do thank all of you for all that you have given me and for the opportunity to participate in living with you. Thank you.
Thank you, Carol. Alcoholics Anonymous is not an ad hoc religion. It is not a cult. One of the greatest things, one of the greatest spiritual truths of our fellowship is that in a meeting of this kind and in any meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, we have peoples of all races, all creeds, all religions, and none. And when it comes time for us to close our meetings, we all get up together and as one man say, "Our Father." We have very little interest in what a man or a woman's religion is. It's none of our business, and we don't make it any. But every once in a while, one of our number is sort of identified by the clothes that he wears. And so we think once in a while a little in terms of religion. But I suspect our speaker this morning will almost make you forget that he has on a backwards collar. You know, I could take all of his time and all of yours just telling you the many, many reasons why I love him so much. But I'm not going to do it. I'm going to tell one little thing. As many of you know, Mr. Archie Roosevelt has served our society as a non-alcoholic member of our Board of Trustees for a great number of years. Now, I think I met Mr. Roosevelt about 12 or 14 years ago. But I have never known him well enough to be able to see his virtues as well as I can see his defects of character. And Mr. Archer was chairing a meeting in Toronto at our international convention. I think it was called Religion Looks at Alcoholics Anonymous. And he was chairing the meeting, and we had two non-alcoholic speakers who were very learned religionists, teachers, I think, and stuff like that there. And they came before our speaker of this morning, and we listened to a great deal. Never heard anything. And then it came time to introduce our speaker. And Mr. Roosevelt got up there and spieled about a minute and a half or 2 minutes of Latin. Meanwhile, our speaker of this morning was sitting over there chewing gum. I asked him this morning where his gum was. And he was chewing pretty hard on that gum. And Archie was spieling his Latin, you know. And he got up there, our speaker of this morning, and he says, you know, it's a strange thing that just when the Catholics are discarding Latin, the Episcopalians are taking it up. Well, that's our boy. I give you Father Barney from Portland, Oregon. Father Barney.
As Chuck has announced, I'm Father Barney and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Father.
In fact, on my badge here, I see I am Father Barney Nixon. I'm Father Barney to alcoholics, Al-Anons, and Alateens. And I'm Father Nixon to all those other unfortunate members of the human race. I thank God for my sobriety, and I thank God that I'm here this morning. Because if I were not here this morning in this capacity as speaker and member of AA, I wouldn't be alive. I know that. To me, to be here this morning is synonymous with my sobriety. 1 week from today, I will celebrate my 24th anniversary as a priest. And but for the grace of God and you people, that wouldn't be possible. So I feel very humble and grateful to be here. And I want to thank our chairman, Chuck, for being here also, because I know that to be here this morning, he had to forego a very important speaking engagement. As you know, he's speaking day and night. So I want to thank him for being here. I also want to thank him for not being here 3 years ago. This may sound like a contradiction in terms, but it's not, because if it weren't for that fact, and had he recommended me to Maury to get me here as a substitute for himself, I would never be at this wonderful gathering, I'm sure, today. You know, Maury called me at that time. He was running a little short on time, although I don't think time means a thing to this guy. And he identified himself as Maury Scanlon of Palm Beach, and wanted to know if I would be willing to come down here and talk at the spiritual meeting. And he identified himself also as a redneck. You know what that is, don't you? That's a Catholic. So I told him, I said, Maury, I can answer you right now, but you know well enough that I got to get certain clearances from the Episcopate. By the way, I was introduced last night by my good friend Jack as His Excellency. That's not quite correct. So I have to go to the excellencies and get these permissions. So I mentioned that to Moore, and he said, don't worry at all. I'll take care of that. That usually takes at least 3 weeks. I got a call back in a half hour. He says, I got everything covered. He's not only efficient, he's instant. Well, anyway, I had a little more time this occasion, and so I wrote my own letter. Because we have a new bishop here in San Diego, as you know, Bishop Buddy went to his reward here a couple months ago. So I wrote to Bishop Fury, the new bishop, told him what the deal was. And he wrote me a beautiful letter. In fact, he says, you have my permission to bring my greetings and very best wishes to those who will attend the conference at Palm Springs. I have the greatest admiration for the excellent work the AAs have done and are doing. Signed, Francis Fury. You know, that reminds me of another cute little story I heard not long ago of another churchman, happy and holy memory, Pope John. Well, I think it did more than any other churchman to let the left-handers know what the right-handers were doing. Now, I will not vouch for the credibility of this story, but I certainly vouch for the plausibility. It seems that a little Italian nun received as a Christmas present a bottle of cherries put up in brandy. What a present for a nun. Joe last night, after he mentioned about that good nun that take a few fifths of Gallo, how she'd feel if he had known any nun of that description. But anyway, the little nun didn't know what to do with it, so she thought it'd be a very nice thing if she'd send it on to Pope John as a present. So she did. A few days later, she receives a note from the good Pope. And he says, dear sister, I want to thank you for your very kind present. But I must confess that even though I don't care for cherries at all, I certainly did enjoy the spirit in which it was sent. Now, there was a day when this good padre did enjoy the spirits of alcohol, believe you me. We were good friends. At least I thought it was a friendship. But it turned out to be a very disastrous thing for me. Since I've come into AA, I've really enjoyed spiritual concepts, the spiritual concepts of AA. This is a beautiful program, a spiritual program. So this morning, I'm not going to give you a speech. Certainly, I'm not going to give you a sermon. I'm going to meditate out loud with you, and we're going to meditate on the 11th step, where we sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. You know, someone has described the third step as the heart of the 12 steps. If that's true, then I would say this 11th step is the spiritual source of energy which keeps that heart beating, which keeps this program living. And to me, that's why it's so important. We sought. To me, that would indicate personal effort. I wanted. I was talking to Joe this morning, our wonderful speaker of last night. We were having coffee at the bar. And it wasn't a coffee royal either, I assure you. And we were talking about spiritual things. I told him how much I was impressed with the way he ended his speech last night, in such a beautiful spiritual tone of the possessed man who was exercised by Christ, who was returned to normalcy, and then he was given a commission to go out and carry the message. It was beautiful. It's AA. And we were talking about AA in general. And he made a very significant remark that I agree with. He says, you know, no matter where you go in AA, you can always sense that undercurrent of the spiritual, even in the fellows that are fighting. And there are a few fighters. And like he said, it's there. And he mentioned, and I'll bring this out to you good people of Southern California, he said you find it in superabundance down here, and I agree with him. I agree with him. That's why we have so many here this morning. You know, when I came in here at 10 minutes to 10, I think there were 44 people. And I thought, well, boy, that's a pretty tough deal following Freddie Martin when he played all night. What's that tune when we danced all night? And I thought they'd be sleeping all morning. Well, here we are, full house. You know, it's like AA. AA is not for the people who need it. It's for those who want it. You want it. That's why you're here. We sought personal effort. I remember one time I was giving a talk, an AA talk, to a group of Presbyterian ladies in the basement of the Presbyterian Church. The ecumenical movement. I don't only carry the message of the spiritual, but the message of the spirits. And these old ladies are sitting there, and when I start talking to them, my goodness, what a bunch. There's not one in here. I doubt if there's even an Al-Anon, and there's certainly no Alateens. I knew that. Well, anyway, I gave this talk, and then afterwards I threw it open to questions. And one little lady got up. She says, Father, she said, does the alcoholic ever lose his thirst for alcohol? And I said, well, I suppose you can say yes to a degree. It's always there, potentially ready to spring out, but I suppose you can control it. But I'll guarantee you one thing, he never loses his thirst. He's always thirsty. And what's he thirsting for? The thing he was drinking about. He was trying to find his higher power through a bottle. And when you take the bottle away, now he's got to find that higher power. He's dead. So we don't lose our thirst. We sought through prayer and meditation. I've often wondered, now what I say are purely my own ideas that I got from you people. If I've ever said an original thing, I don't know what it is. Except that I'm Father Barney and I'm an alcoholic, and I don't know another Father Barney in the AA. Maybe there is there, too, so I don't know about that. But I've often wondered, why do they say prayer and meditation? Why do they just say meditation? Because I know alcoholics. Geez, I used to meditate when I was drinking. Some of my most profound meditations was, how was I going to get that booze? I was just telling Chuck here, you know, Chuck and I are dear old pals, and I remember when I was at one of these conferences, and we went up to one of the penthouses, and where they were having their refreshments up there, the AA refreshments, coffee. And all of a sudden, I take my coat off, and I have a sports shirt on, all ready to go. And JC said, my gosh, you're a quick change artist. And I said, I have to be. I can remember times when I was driving down the street with a collar on, this on, and a sports shirt underneath. The liquor store was around the corner. Believe you me, I made a legal turn, got this coat off, the collar off, and I was ready to go in and get the bottle, and before I made the next turn, I was back in character again. That not only takes meditation, that takes practice. How many times you meditate, how are you going to sneak that jug in? Or you meditate, where did I leave it? What bush? As I speak to you now, probably some guy is sitting down meditating how he's going to crack the safe in the First National Bank. And that is a very profound meditation, I'll guarantee you. And here's another guy, maybe an alky, who's also meditating. He's also meditating how to crack another safe, the treasury of the kingdom of heaven, how he's going to make a better life for himself. That's the difference. The meditation we're talking about is prayerful. It has God as its subject. We sought to improve. It would seem to me that this word would indicate that we already have some pre-existing contact with God. Well, it seems to me if I get up to that 10th step, I've made that 10th step, I already have. I have contact with God. Not necessarily conscious, but I have it. You know, these are beautiful steps. These are steps that were made after the patient was diagnosed as to what the heck was wrong with him, what he needed. You know, some of these treatments are figured out ahead of time, and then they try to fit the patient into the treatment. And sometimes we leave an arm or a leg off somewhere along the line. Something missing. And we don't have sobriety. But this is just the opposite. That first step, the aversion of nature. Admitted we were powerless over alcohol, and our life had become unmanageable. You know, God is good. He's wise. He puts his own retribution in this nature of ours. You don't have to have a judge to pass sentence before this takes effect. It works automatically. You drink too much, eat too much, you get a bellyache. You get a headache. Whatever it might be. You drink too much and someday your body's going to say, I've had enough. Lay off. That's nature saying you've had enough. It's the aversion of nature. I went through that. I went pretty far. Because, you know, I used to have to fight the mental and emotional part of this thing because I was a priest. Thank God I never lost my respect for the priesthood, and I knew what the obligations were, and I tried to protect that part of it, even though I wasn't taking care of myself, so I would fight the effects. I had a little theory, just if you could relax for 5 minutes completely, you'd clear it up like that. Yeah, that's what I thought. And then to take care of your public, your parishioners, Clarets. I used to eat so many of those Clarets when I talked, it looked like St. Patrick's. I used to sit in a great big overchuffed leather chair where you couldn't possibly get near me. I was so far back. It took care of the breath situation, see. But all the time, I was getting more and more into this old body of mine. And it was taking its toll. Well, I experienced the audio portion of DTs. I never got the video on. It would probably have been in color, had I. During this time, you know, I was a pastor, a busy pastor, and was I busy? I had 17 Jesuits under me. I was their superior. Not that I was superior, but they call me that. I was a superintendent of a high school and a grade school. I was pastor of this parish, and I even had a graveyard. I was in charge of the Catholic graveyard. I used to often go out there with the stiffs. That was the only place where I could get solace, where nobody would come in and ask me a question, nobody would be checking on me, so I'd go out there. It was a fine place to drink.